Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care, and we are
greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, we all got. generation. Our ancestors and elders took special care in their decision-making to ensure us a prosperous future. Respect and honor towards our elders. We hold the truth, the secrets, the lessons of life in the bottom past. It is time for us to conduct ourselves properly in accordance to the ancient ways that have been entrusted to us. We preserve our strength for you through words, through songs, with our dance. We show our love for you.
Seventh Generation, a song by Haudenosaunee singer-songwriter Howard Lyons from his Sound of America recording CD entitled Spirit Walk. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. RFPI is Global Community Radio. In today's Wolf Mountain program, we are very honored to share a visit with one of the finest Native writers, educator, and scholar activist in Indian country, Professor Gabe Horn. In addition to serving on Yat-Kitishi Native Center's Advisory Council, Gabe is a close personal friend to Betty and I. We are brothers in spirit and brothers in honoring Mother Earth and our Indigenous movement. We first met 10 years ago, while both of us were speakers at a Native conference focusing on the true history and legacy of Christopher Columbus during the so-called Columbus Quincentenary. Over the years, our hearts grow strong together, sharing ceremony and working together on projects to defend Sacred Mother Earth, for Native rights, and for social justice. Gabe Horn and I also share a similar history of experiences growing up in the India movement, which makes me proud of him as a brother warrior. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have heard me praise his fine book, Native Heart, An American Indian Odyssey, published by New World Library. I again urge everyone who cares about the Native struggle and who wishes an insight into what many find AIM brothers and sisters went through, read Gabe's book, Native Heart. Professor Horn is a nationally known writer. In addition to Native Heart, Gabe wrote a four-book Native People, Native Ways series entitled The Native American Book of Wisdom, Book of Life, Book of Change, and Book of Knowledge. These are excellent writings for all ages, published by Beyond Words Press. Professor Horn authored the fine book, Contemplations of a Primal Mind, published by the University of Florida Press. Listeners to our Wolf Mountain broadcasts have also heard the 8-program series audio literature presentation of the book, Wisdom Keepers, Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders, by authors Harvey Arden and Steve Wall. That beautiful book, published by Beyond Words Press, was edited by our program guest, my brother Gabe Horn. Last but certainly not least, Gabe's latest work, The Book of Ceremonies, A Native Way of Honoring and Living the Sacred, is a very special and precious literature, published by New World Library. The beautiful illustrations in this Book of Ceremonies was drawn by his very talented artist son, Carissus Horn. As a special treat for our listeners to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, my brother Gabe Horn gifted us a newly released CD that features excerpts from his Book of Ceremonies, which he also gave me permission to include in our interview and air on Radio for Peace International. This beautiful CD includes selections read by the author, Gabe Horn, accompanied by music from our friend Dennis Harrison. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio have also heard the beautiful song, Free Peltier, written by Dennis, from the Songs for Justice Project CD, which Betty and I are proud to be a part of, along with Gabe Horn, Ted Williams, and Diana Osborne. We will share that special Free Peltier song later on during the interview with my brother, Gabe Horn. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices on Radio for Peace International. This is your host and producer, Oness, and I'm very grateful and honored to be sharing this time with a very good brother, a friend of mine, a colleague, Professor Gabe Horn. And Professor Horn is a very well-known, respected writer and educator, and one of my favorite series of books that I encourage all our listeners to read, and I will announce the titles later, as a very fine Native series. Would you please let our listeners know about this?
Well, the Native People, Native Ways series, I wrote it for young readers. You could probably, a fourth grader could read it, but of course it can be read by anybody. What it amounts to is I learned all what I felt were these incredible things from our people as I grew. And I thought they were teaching me these things for a reason. They knew I was a teacher, and it was important to pass these things on. So what I did was I wrote about what I learned about who Quetzalcoatl was. I wrote about what I learned about white buffalo woman, white buffalo calf woman, Kukulcan, Mongol Kapik, the peacemaker of the Haudenosaunee. I wrote about these things in a shallow way, but in a way that would at least teach people that these beings were alive and walked the Americas, and they were not named Jesus, and they were not named Buddha, and they were not named Muhammad, that we had our holy people here, and that these great beings brought spiritual concepts to us. They helped revitalize our cultures. They revitalized us as people. And that if you live in the Americas, you should know about these beings, whether you're Indian or not, because these are the beings who came from here, who looked at the stars under these skies, who drank from the water from these rivers when they were, of course, pure and clean. So that's what I thought was important, that to teach that these were the sacred beings who walked the Americas, and the accomplishments of our people, the great civilizations of the Aztecs, the Incas, the Mayas, the law of great peace of the Haudenosaunee, the teachings of the Lakota way, all these, just to give the reader a taste of the incredible wealth of knowledge that is in the Americas, and that to show that Native Americans are a viable aspect of that circle of life that has often been ignored. And I wanted to have something that teachers could use in the schools, because a lot of teachers don't know. And a lot of books that I was picking up, you know, they would call, you know, they would say things like, then they sacrificed virgins to the evil god Quetzalcoatl, or they would, and I would be horrified. And so, you know, the thing is that I could complain about it, or that I could do something about it. And so I chose to do something about it, because it was in unison, in harmony with the vision that I was given when I was a few years younger than I am now. And this vision had to do with the word. And so I used the word to teach, and to teach the beauty of our people, and the culture of the that was of the Americas, the cultures of the Americas. So that's what's in there. I taught about about raising children, about how important children were in our society. There, everything was for the children, and ways that I learned to raise children. I wouldn't have known these ways hadn't I been taught. And I thought, geez, there may be so many Indian people out there that we don't have elders, any maybe sometimes who can teach us these things, or sometimes you can learn things from books. I've learned incredible things from books written by our own people. So I thought, geez, you know, what did I learn about? Well, I learned that, you know, we didn't necessarily punish our children. We certainly, I know that there were exceptions, but I learned that predominantly we didn't hit our children, that we loved our children, that we taught them responsibility, that they were equal part of the circle. So I thought that was important, and the games that children played, that I thought it was important to pass on, because it shows how they built character in people. So I saw that. I saw what happens. I wanted to show what happened to Indian people during the time of the North and South American Holocaust that was here. What brought on the changes, and how our people in their dreams saw the changes coming, and how they tried to warn, how can you protect against such a thing as smallpox and measles and mumps and syphilis and all those other diseases? How can you warn? How can you protect yourselves against these things? And the struggle that we had to survive, or Native people had to survive during those times. These were the things that I learned, that did incredible things for my spirit. And I thought, geez, if they did these things for my spirit, maybe I can pass them on, and they can do things for the spirits of other people. And of course, I taught about what I learned about the great mystery, and that we are part of this incomprehensible totality, that every creature is, every being, everything is. And I thought that was important, so that when my son was riding to school one day, and they said, "Do you believe in God?" to him, you know, I said, "Yes, son, you can say you believe in a God, because their God is a part of the great mystery." When they asked him, "Where's your church?" you know, and I took him out to the shore, and this incredible sight of turquoise water and blue sky, and I said, "This is your church, son, the earth and the sky." These are the things that I wanted to share with other Native people and other Native children, and not only them, but anybody that feels connected to this way of thinking. So it would just be a resource for people, and that teachers could use them without having to know these things themselves. They could teach these things. And you know, I've looked at them over the years, and I wondered, geez, did I make a mistake here, and have I learned something? Yes, I've learned more things since then, and I look back, and I might have changed that, but generally speaking, I'm really proud of them. And I figure they taught me so much, the things that I learned out of those books that I put into those books, and I'm thinking, well, maybe they can help to do that for others.
Earlier in our conversation and during this program's introduction, I mentioned your beautiful book, The Book of Ceremonies, as well as your nice gift to me, the Ceremonies CD, which features a number of excerpts from your literature. My next question to you, Gabe, would you please share with our listeners more about this special book of ceremonies? Before you do, however, I want to play the excerpt entitled Marriage Ceremony as an honor to our beloved Simone Horn, a dear sister to Betty and I, your fine first wife, who passed into the spirit world years ago, but who is still with us in our heart.
What are you saying to me? I am arrayed like the roses, and as beautiful as they. They stood together, a man and a woman, holding hands within a circle of wild oaks and sable palms. A warm wind swept the sweet spring air around them into a gentle, loving force that tantalized their senses. The light of a full moon, big and white against the night, cast long shadows that stretched from the base of the trees to the bare feet of the two people who stood at the center of this place. The shadows connected them to everything, like the spokes of a great wheel connect the center hub to the great circle of the rim. Above them, wrapped all around them, was a blanket of night and glistening stars. He told her that he would honor and respect her, that he would support her on this journey. He held out a strand of deep red silk and tied his wrist to hers. In this sacred time, when they talked of their union, he acknowledged to her his shortcomings. At times he had been selfish, sometimes impatient. He thanked her for the patience she had shown, and for the patience she would need. Then he looked into her eyes so deeply that she could see into his heart, and he promised to her his love for as long as he could breathe. Then he kissed her hand. These words did not spring from a shallow pool, but from a place deep within his spirit being. The words helped him to bring into clearer form what he knew to be true. He knew it in the way the sun knows its own heat, in the way the eagle knows the wind, in the way the body knows the soul. He knew it would take his lifetime to show her the full meaning of his promise. He said these things to her while the trees listened, while the moon watched, and while the evening star witnessed. She too expressed her love for him there in the little circle of oaks and palms within the greater circles of the earth and the galaxy and the night. She too acknowledged her weaknesses, and she thanked him for the strength she felt she could draw from the love he gave to her. Her life has more meaning now, she told him, now that he would share in it, in her hopes and dreams, in her joys, and even the sorrows that would come. She was delighted that this man would accompany her along the way. He was her companion. She told him that she too would honor him and respect him, and that for as long as they shared this journey, she would give her trust to him. I love you, she whispered, while the trees listened, while the moon could see, and while the evening star witnessed. And so it was done. She slowly untied the strand of deep red silk fastened to their wrists and gently kissed his lips. Their journey together had begun.
This is the Book of Ceremonies. Boy, this book has a little history into it already. Just before my wife Simone died of breast cancer, about 2 days before she died, She sat up in bed and she said, Gabe, you're going to write, I see this book, I believe she said. It begins with a C, she said. It's going to be really big, Gabe. She said, I don't think it's The Great Change, which is another book that I did with a C. She says, and I don't think it's Ceremony in the Circle of Life. She said, it's one you haven't written yet. Well, 2 days later, she made her transition. About a year after that, my publisher had a dream. My publisher at New World Library called me late one night, because he calls from California in the east, to the East Coast, so you know it's going to be late here. And he woke me up and told me he just had a dream. And he had a dream that I wrote a book, and it had a big crescent moon for the sea, for a sea, he said. And he even knew the title. He said, it's the Book of Ceremonies. And I went, whoa. And I thought, geez, what a book. But then the question was, how do you write a book of ceremonies? You know, who am I? You know, you go through that every book. Who am I to write these things, you know? And you go through the whole self-evaluation, and you go through, you have to humble yourself, and go through that process. Well, I couldn't, I for a year I struggled how to write this book. You know, first of all, ceremonies, you know, what, you know, people are going to say, what are you giving away our ceremonies? Well, I don't want to give away ceremonies. And then people, what ceremonies are you doing? Are you doing Mohawk ceremonies? Are you doing? I said, geez, you know, what about that too, you know? And so the last thing I want to do is offend my own people. But at the same time, I saw this need. The reason I saw the need was because I had the need. My family had the need. My extended family had the need of ceremony. And I had to go through, well, is this going to be a mishmash? Are people going to say what? And I stopped thinking about what people are going to say. What's needed? What's needed? And how to do this right? And how to do it humbly? And then I was at the beach up Paso Grill, where I usually go and hang out, and I was reading one of my wife's journals, and the one she left me, one of the ones she left me before she crossed over, and in it she describes herself going out and greeting the sun one morning, and I thought, that's it. That's a ceremony. Now, is that an Ojibwe ceremony? Is that an Onondaga ceremony? Is that a Seminole ceremony? You know, I don't know. I know it's a ceremony. And it's a native ceremony because my wife's native, and because she learned it, and because it feels like it comes from here, right? I describe this in this particular scene of my wife greeting the sun. I described what it was like to hold my child up to the sun and to place him in the waters, to bestow a name on him. I described what it was like when she died, but I did this through vignettes and through removed third-person accounts, not through personalized accounts, not through first-person accounts. So I thought, okay, these are ceremonies maybe that people like us that live in a place like we do, but who still identify as Indians, that still identify as Native people and want to do things in that way, but who come from different tribal backgrounds, maybe even different racial backgrounds too. So I described, you know, how we dealt with death. And in that dealing, I remember being told by Cherokee elders, this is what you do now. This is what you do with the body. And I remember being told by a Mohawk elder, play the drums on. I know that what we do is we play the drums all night long. And so we did these things. We did all the things that the elders who phoned or the elders who visited us told us or suggested that we did. They didn't tell us to do. These are the things they say we did. And they all felt right because they were all a part of our family. And they were all a part of our lives. And so we did these things. And so I described these ceremonies of the circle and the smoke and the planting of the tree. I described the releasing of the spirit, the address of the pipe. I described the feast. I described the drumming all night long. So is it a mishmash? What did I violate? Did I cross boundaries? Probably. but I know that these things worked for us, and they felt good, and they felt right, and they still do. And maybe this is all a process of getting back to something, I don't know. But it was something that I felt could be shared. And so I shared it. And when like about the cord, the umbilical cord of a child, we learned that you save that part of the cord that falls off the child's belly. You know, no, I don't think anybody saved my cord, but it doesn't mean I wasn't going to save the cord of my children. So we saved the cord. But how did I know to do that? Because someone taught us to do that, who happened to be Ojibwe. And so we saved the cord, and I found out, well, the Lakotas did that too. Oh, did you know these people did that too? Oh, the Cherokees, and it went on and on and on. So I found there were so many similarities in that way. So so I described what the cord represented to us, or to the people who saved the cord, and what they put the cord in, and about that first year of a child's life. I even described a dream catcher, you know, and as, you know, hey, do you hang it from your rearview mirror, or do you hang it over your bed, you know, or do you hang it over your child's cradle? Is it a way of life for you, or is it a decoration for you? Is it something that was handed down by Spider Grandmother? Do you believe that, or is it something you hang up as an ornament? Is it a way of life? And so this is what the Book of Ceremonies is about. It was and to get married, who wants to get married, you know, by a priest? I don't want to get married by a priest. I didn't want to get married by, certainly by the state official, somebody from the government of all, pronouncing me and the woman that I loved to be married. Come on, get real. So who married us? We held the pipe. We married ourselves right there, right under the stars, right under the earth. You know, who are our witnesses? The stars, the earth. There are different ways I found that we got married, but a marriage ceremony of two people just living together and setting up house together and loving each other, that I thought was important to describe. The idea was is that it wasn't you didn't need somebody else to marry you. This is how I learned to do it, and so I passed it on in this way. So that's what the Book of Ceremonies is about. And where Chrysis came in is, my gosh, you know, he's been drawing ever since he could hold a pencil, and he was creating these beautiful images. And sometimes I'd see these beautiful images he'd create, and I'd go, holy cow, I have to write up to that level. And sometimes I would make total rewrites of things that I wrote after I saw one of his pictures or one of his paintings for the book, because I realized what I wrote wasn't equal to what he drew. I didn't feel that way. So he made me work really hard, and of course I had to make it something that he would be proud to be a part of too, so that he is a part of this book, and that he is my small son. Just is an incredible gift, and I hope that everybody that reads the book is drawn into and feels a sacred relationship to the land and to each other and to the universe. I described this one scene where it's a true story about a scientist in an African rainforest who happened to watch a chimpanzee go by a particular place that the scientist was sitting, and the chimpanzee was carrying a papaya, which is one of their favorite foods. And the chimp seemed to be especially caught by this beautiful sunset, and so the scientist watched the chimp for a full 15 minutes pick a particular nice view over this cliff and watch the sun go down. And when it was over, the scientists say, the chimp placed the papaya down on the ground and walked back into the forest. Of course, there's been a great debate of what the chimp was doing. He forgot the papaya, you know, he was looking at something else. But the scientist knew exactly what he was looking at. And I feel, you know, maybe that chimp was leaving the papaya there as an offering to something that was so beautiful. That was his ceremony. That was his acknowledgement. Now, was that a chimpanzee ceremony? That was the same ceremony as anybody, as any one of us could have. It's a part of who we are and our relationship to the universe. And so that's what the Book of Ceremonies is about.
We'll
friend, as you were speaking, and I honor you as my brother and also as an educator, and when you talk about knowledge and wisdom, in our indigenous cultures, our real teachers, our real sources of knowledge is really the natural world, our relations, the four-leggeds, the two-wingeds, the insect beings, and the water, fish, and marine life. And as I say in my language, Kinemontakos and all our relations, as Lakota say, Mitake Owaise, which I might be mispronouncing. But the concept is that really our way of life, our spiritual way of life, and our understanding as native people, as tribal people, really is based on our Mother Earth. And to me, many of our listeners know how I value the importance of learning from the natural world and spending what they call English time out in the woods or along the coast, along the ocean. That helps me learn from the animal people and through my dreams try to communicate with them and to try to learn what they are saying. Would you talk about, for you personally, some of the wisdom and experiences that you have learned from the animal and plant people, and in particular, if you might share with some of our listeners, the lessons from the dolphins?
I learned so much from the animals, from the plants, from the trees. But I think I'll share two things. One was recent, from the wolf, and then the other was, of course, from the dolphins. Not too long ago, one of my students, one of my former students, who was involved in a wolf program to protect their habitat and to help them when they're in need, brought a wolf puppy to my office one day that had been, I don't know, something had happened to the pup's parents, and they were taking care of her. And I'll never forget the incredible vitality I felt that day as that wolf. It was the closest I've ever been to a wolf pup. And it was just wonderful. But the real lesson was to come after I behaved properly with that wolf pup, was to happen about a week later. She came and she said, "There's somebody out and I want you to meet." And so I kind of cringed, like, "Oh no, who am I going to meet now?" And but I went and met this being, and this being happened to be a wolf. And when I first met the wolf, I was immediately taken by the size of the being, and I was scared. Naturally, it was instinctive to be a wolf. But he was so beautiful. And of course, I was respectful and said, as I was pinned myself against whatever object I was leaning against at the time, "What do I do?" And she said, "Just be still. If he wants you to touch him, he'll let you know." And not too long, he came up and started sniffing around at my midsection. He was that tall. And she said, "He's telling you it's all right to pet him." So I started stroking his incredible hair. And, oh man, he was just so beautiful. And I was stroking his hair, and as I was stroking his hair, a car drove by, and this lady gets out of the car, and she yells out something like, "Oh, is that a full-blooded wolf?" You know, it reminds me of people that get, "Are you full-blooded Indian?" And so I kind of cringed when she said that, and the woman who was caring for this being now, she said, "Yes, he's wolf." She says, "Can I pet him?" She says, no, "Just stay where you are. If he wants to get to know you, he will come to you." Well, it was really interesting because that wolf never went near that lady, and I thought, you know, I wouldn't have gone near her either. And I thought, you know, what an affirmation he was giving me of my instincts about other life forms, you know, what to stay away from, what to be drawn to. And I thought that was pretty neat, but that was only part of the day. In a little while, she got a little frustrated as she talked on and on about raising malamutes or something. And then finally she got frustrated and a little insulted that the wolf didn't go up to her. So she drove away, leaving just us again. And he came back to me, and I started petting him again. And I was just lost in his beauty. He was so beautiful. And I was just lost in stroking him and adoring him the way I was, trying to be respectful, of course. And then he stepped about a foot away from me. And I reached to pet him, and I heard this, I mean, it was a It was a growl that hit me in my primal center, enough to tell me, whoa, what did I do? And I turned and said to this, to the woman who was caring for him, I said, what did I do? And she said, he's just letting you know that's enough. And I said, I thought that's what he's telling me. Oh, I mean, I'm not too stupid as a human. I can figure some things out. And, at that moment, he turned to me. And this is what he said to me. And he said it as clear as I can say it right now, as I can remember it. He said, do not chase after beauty. He said, you cannot own it. You cannot control it. Beauty is in of itself its own being. Appreciate it on its own terms. Even luxuriate on it and respect it. But it is in and of itself its own life. I was floored. Because that was it. That was one of the greatest teachings of my life, in a nutshell, of anybody's life. What do we do in this society, in this civilization? What do we do with zoos? We get these beautiful animals, these tanks, and we put them in cages, and we put them in tanks because we capture their beauty so that people can see it. We do it to everything. We try to control it all. If we see beauty, we try to own it. We try to buy it. That's what rich people do. They try to buy beauty. After they destroy a lot of it to get their money, then they try to buy what it is they have. And they think they can own it. And they forbid everybody else to trespass near it. You cannot own it. You cannot possess it. And it's just like love. It's just like the love you have for another person. You cannot go through life chasing after love, and you cannot, you know, love will come when it's ready. And when it comes, you respect it and honor it and appreciate it for what it is. You can't own it, and you certainly can't control it. So just appreciate it and respect it. So it was an incredible life's teaching from a wolf. Now, how did that wolf say that to me? As clear as I said it to you. That's all I can tell you. Now, years ago, I was in the water with my family in dream time with the dolphins. And I wrote about this in Native Heart, and I'll try to say it real short in a nutshell. The elder dolphin looked at me, and he said to me, what makes you so different? Why can some of you kill us, care nothing about us, care nothing about our world? And why do others of you love us, respect us, appreciate this world? What is it that makes you so different? And that took me back. But I had to answer, and so I answered quickly. And I said, our beliefs. I don't know where that came from, it just came, our beliefs. What do our beliefs teach us? Our native beliefs teach us that all life is our relative. The animals are our relatives, the trees are our relatives, that everything is related. That the earth is our mother, the sky our father, the sun our elder, our grandfather, our father, our elder, brother, the moon, grandmother. We're related to everything. What do the other religions teach us that came here? That we're removed from everything, that we're superior beings, that we are the superior life forms, that we are the pinnacles of creation. And so I realize that that's what makes us different. It's the way we see the world. Some see, you know, animals as trophies to kill and mount on their walls. I know that here in Florida alone, you see pictures of Pasiguro Beach where I go now and spend time. There were so many, tens of thousands, myriad fish and life forms. And you see, when the Europeans came, they would brag about, I bagged, you know, I caught 1,500 kingfish today, and I caught 2,000 last week, and now you don't see them anymore. Because what was life to them? What did their religion teach them about life? Come on. And what did they bring here? So this is what the animals taught me. Okay? This dolphin made me realize something. It is our beliefs that reflect how we live and make us who we are. Those are just two examples of how animals teach us. And then lastly, a grandmother, Mohawk grandmother, said this to me. She said, And I wrote about this in the Book of Ceremonies because it was so important. She said a young girl, 16-year-old, had tried to commit suicide, and her mother was just beside herself what to do. So she brought the 16-year-old to see the grandmother. And the young girl goes, "Grandma," she says, "I got no role model," she says. "Everybody drinks." She says, "My mom drinks, my father, you know, whenever I see him, he's been drinking, you know," she says, and she goes on, "No role models." And that grandmother put her hand on that girl's knee and said, "Sweetheart," she said, "your role models are all around you." She said, "They're in the birds, the whales, the dolphins, they're in the sea, they're in the animals, there's plants and the trees. Your role models are everywhere. Your teachers of life are everywhere. They teach us how to live. Watch them and learn from them. Whoever said people were your only role models?" That floored me, that little story, because there was so much beauty and truth to it. And so that's what I have to share about.
Where did she go? She clothed me when I was naked and smooth. Sheltered me from the bitter cold. Fed me when I was hungry and cold. Now where did she go? A friend that I've grown to know. My friend, the buffalo. Why it seemed like just yesterday that I felt the ground tremble as you came running by. Now I watch the buzzards circling in the sky, and the iron horse that cuts through our land. He died every day from the guns of the white man. They take you high and leave me to rot. Where did she go? My friend that I've grown to know. My friend, the buffalo. Without you, my people will surely die. Already the babies begin to cry. I stand on the hill and pray. But gone are the days. Where will we go? My friend that I've grown to know. Friend, the buffalo. My friend, the buffalo.
You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Wolf Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Wolf Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories in the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples. Dear friends, we are nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio. We hope you have enjoyed my conversation with my brother warrior Gabe Horn. Next week, we continue our interview with Professor Horn in Program 3 of the series. The music we featured in today's program were a flute song entitled Valley of the Rising Sun from my dear friends Chris and Ray Redfeather off their CD Cedar Roots. Listeners to our program may remember that Chris and Ray were members of our intertribal drum, Calusa Bay, here in Southwest Florida, until they relocated their Hotwood Flutes workshop to the mountains of Colorado. The last song you heard was Buddy Redbow's classic, My Friend the Buffalo. We conclude today's broadcast with a beautiful selection from the CD, Gathering, Native Alaskan Music and Words, from my Tlingit friends, the Danies, who gifted me their newly released recording from Nightwork Records of Anchorage, Alaska. The song is entitled Blessing by Kenny Timberwolf with Tim Crawford. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Spirit, Grandfather, we are honored to be here today. We come to you as relatives of all creation. We come to you from the east, from Grandfather Sun, and the illumination that you have brought on our path today. We come to you out of respect to the south, and the innocence that we came into this world, trusting our heart to be one of our first teachers. We have come from the east, in the spirit of Grandfather Sun, who has guided our path on many a lesson to be learned. We come to you from the north, from the elders and their great wisdom. We come to you as relatives of the universe. We ask that these words, these stories, these sounds, these ways do not offend the spirits and hearts of those that hear these sounds of healing music. We ask now that the eagle, our brother, carry our prayers back to you on its wings in a good way. Chinanali Koyana Agu Gunishish Ho Ho Masitang